Salwate discipuli, salwate omnes. Welcome again to another episode of Latin in Layman's, where we're going to be doing another myth. So sit back, relax, snack time, drink time, whatever you want to call it time, popcorn it time. I don't know. Maybe you got some mandarin oranges. I realized the other day that our teacher's lounge has an exuberant amount of mandarin oranges. And when we were doing a little bit of a wrapping up of our semester here, one of my smaller classes, I was like, you know what, you guys, how many of you guys want some manders? Anybody want some manders while we watch a little bit of a video here and kind of kick back, relax, and just kind of chill out? You know, we can kiss Latin goodbye for the semester, all that stuff. You know, the kids want to hear that stuff. They don't want to think about school anymore. I get it. I understand. I don't blame you if you don't like Latin. It's not a big deal. I take no offense to it. But with that being said, we all sat back, relaxed, and we had all ourselves little Mander cups. If you guys remember those from back in the day, I used to have those as a kid. I wasn't the biggest fan of them, to be honest, because texture-wise, I don't like that slimy texture, but I've gotten used to it, and that's why I didn't like mushrooms at first, but now I'm starting to try and incorporating them a little bit more into my diet because there's a lot of benefits. Like, my brother recommended that I watch this documentary a long time ago called The Fantastic Fungi. It's actually fungi, apparently, not fungi. So fungi, and fungi, which is something that is pretty new to me to have to pronounce. Honestly, tomato, tomato, potato, potato. Say fungi if you want to. There's a joke that riffs off of fungi, all right? I want to be a fungi. So, you know what? Tomato, tomato. Remember, I wasn't consulted in the design phase of all this pronunciation stuff, and nor were you, and nobody was, unless you actually have a time machine where you kind of hop into it and you harken back to the time that you want to go to every single day just to learn a little bit more, and then come back and let everybody know that you're the one that actually knows. I don't know. All right, I'm done. Ramble bambling, donezo, because you guys know me. Yesterday, I ended up wanting to, or last episode rather, I was wanting to get into the myth of Circe, aka Cerci. Right? Cicero in Latin is actually pronounced correctly as Cicero, hard C's, K's. So it'd be Cerci. But I ended up riffing off on a bunch of lovey-dovey stuff, as well as what is hubris, what are the acts of hubris, how do you rectify one's hubris if you have committed it? And I think that we kind of, well, you know what? I don't know. I mean, like, it was a question especially from a loyal supporter of mine that has contributed to my Ko-Fi. She's rocking awesome. I mean, I appreciate you so much, Aya. So thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I thought that that was a really great thing to kind of deliberate on. And I think that you had a really great question. Why was her hubris rewarded? It wasn't really rewarded at the end of the day, is what we came to understand, is that through human endeavor and effort, she actually eventually rectified and kind of like recompensed the fact that she had kind of, you know, done something that she should have not done, but did it in a way, and not in order to challenge the nature of the gods or anything like that, or challenge divinity or challenge the metaphysical, but really she just wanted self-reassurance. And sometimes that curiosity can really, you know, it's okay to be curious. We just have to remember that we have consequences that ensue with those curiosities that we entertain. So remember, With our actions comes those consequences. So therefore, Uncle Ben, my homie G, and the hizzle my nizzle for shizzle, D-O-double-G, is that with great power comes great responsibility. And the power that you have is the choices that you can make throughout your life. You have the power of your life. You are the master of your universe. That is a lot of power, if you understand it, because then if you realize it, you could be on a path that you don't like, but you could change it in one shape, one flip of a switch. Man, I wish I could do that. I feel like all of us wish we could do it. We strive to do that, but man, is human nature hard, ain't it? Ain't it? hate saying ain't. I'm sorry that I said it. I hate the fact that it's in the dictionary. Whoever put it there is going to find my fist in their face at some point. And then hopefully I don't get a little too overzealous and try and rearrange said face that I'm making contact with my fist. But we're done. Thank you guys for sticking on with me. Would love to have you if you have not considered listening. So for this one, it's story time. This is approachable to all audiences. We aren't doing any etymology unless I decide to etymologize a random word while I'm reading my story that I wrote here, which I tend to do. Sorry, not sorry. But just chill. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, way off, way, way off in a faraway land, there was an era where the gods of Mount Olympus held dominion over the cosmos and mortal tales that unfolded beneath them with their watchful gaze of divine entities. Because here, the myth of Circe emerged as a haunting saga of sorcery and transformation and the intricacies of mortality. This is the enchanting tale here, right now, stick with me, y'all, of a sorceress whose name resonates through the corridors of time, a name that evokes both fear and fascination. Circe. Born of the sun god Helios and the nymph Perse, Circe emerged into existence with an otherworldly charm that set her apart from her divine kin. The enchanting beauty that graced her countenance was matched only by her mastery of magic, an art she explored with an insatiable curiosity that bordered on the reckless. She was careless, maybe. Circe's abode was the mystical island of Aia. Now, with having said that name, it can be Aia or Aia. And potato potato for me, so however you pronounce it, rockin' awesome. Let's do Aia, though. Aia. And Aia was a place nestled far from the prying eyes of mortals. Here she immersed herself in the arcane arts, honing her powers until they surpassed the wildest imaginations of gods and mortals alike. Aia became a realm of myth and mystery, where the air crackled with the energy of sorcery and the lush landscape hid secrets known only to its sorceress. As Circe delved deeper into the secrets of magic, her powers grew exponentially, like an X squared curve. And her fame or infamy spread across the divine realm. She became known for her ability to transform those who trespassed upon her island, turning men into beasts and unraveling the very fabric of their existence. She put them in their place. It was this reputation that garnered the attention of the hero Odysseus and his crew, whose ill-fated journey would become entwined with the destiny of Circe. Odysseus, a mortal hailed for his cunning and courage, sailed the wine dark seas of his epic quest to return home after the fall of Troy. His fame reached the ears of Circe, and as the hero and his crew approached Aia, the sorceress's intrigue mingled with a sense of foreboding. Here on the cusp of destiny, the threads of their fates intertwined. The sailors, unaware of the perils that awaited them, landed on Aia's shores, enticed by the allure of the island's mystique. Circe, Kyrke, weaving her spells with an ethereal grace, welcomed the strangers into her palace. Yet beneath the veneer of hospitality, Xenia, if you will, a darker purpose stirred within her. For Circe, whose powers had elevated her to a status transcending mortal and divine, the divinity, harbored a deep-seated loneliness that yearned for connection. As the feasting and revelry unfolded within the opulent halls of Circe's abode, her palace, the sorceress subtly infused her potions into the drinks of Odysseus's crew. In an instant, the unsuspecting men underwent a grotesque transformation, their human forms contorting into bestial shapes. The once proud sailors found themselves imprisoned in the bodies of swine. Swine. Now I'm hungry for bacon. Odysseus, immune to Circe's enchantments through divine intervention, stood alone amid the bewildering scene. The hero, resolute and undeterred, confronted Circe in her palace, demanding the restoration of his men. Circe, unaccustomed to defiance, found herself both intrigued and challenged by the mortal's audacity. Yet as the hero and the sorceress emerged in the battle of wits and wills, a subtle shift occurred within Circe's heart. Odysseus, with his intelligence and strength, penetrated the walls of her solitude. The hero spoke not only of his desire to reclaim his comrades, but also of the humanity that resided within even the most enchanted souls. This revelation stirred something profound within Circe. Beneath the veneer of her formidable powers and the isolation of her island sanctuary, the sorceress yearned for connection and understanding. Odysseus, with his mortal vulnerability, became a mirror reflecting the human essence that lingered within her immortal frame. In a moment of transformative clarity, Circe chose compassion over cruelty. She relented, releasing Odysseus's crew from her porcine forms and forging an unexpected alliance with the hero. I still hate that we call the Greek heroes heroes, but it also is kind of like a way in which we see how, although they are deemed heroes, they deal with the same issues that typical humans deal with. I don't want to throw a ramble bamble in here, so I'm going to stop, actually. I'll talk about that at the end. In the aftermath of this encounter, the once fearsome sorceress revealed a gentler facet of her nature, a facet that hungered for connection and sought to understand the intricate tapestry of mortality. The myth of Circe, while shrouded in the mystique of sorcery and transformation, unfolds as a narrative rich in the moral implications of ethical exploration. Circe, a figure both feared and revered, personifies the complexities of power, isolation, and the yearning for connection. Her journey was a formidable and from a formidable enchantress to a being capable of empathy, individual unveils the transformative potential of compassion and understanding. We can also think that, well, Odysseus was a bit of a wily dude. Maybe he was really good at convincing her. Because, like, at the end of the day, the sorceress's initial inclination towards transformation and punishment reflects the dangers of unchecked power and the hubris that often accompanies mastery over the arcane. Mastery over the arcane in Greek mythology was, in terms of kind of bridging on hubris. Because if she had become too powerful, then that would challenge the divinity even more so than she already had had. But Cersei, in her isolation, wielded her abilities without consideration for the consequences at first, which is a cautionary tale about the ethical responsibilities that accompany extraordinary abilities. With great power comes great responsibility. Odysseus, however, the mortal hero, emerges as a catalyst for the change of Cersei's story. His resilience, cunning, and capacity for empathy, along just wanting to get home, being a bridge between the mortal and immortal realms, challenging the sorceress to confront the limitations of her powers and the depth of her own humanity. He challenged her, and she took on that challenge, of which she never thought that she would. Because in this dynamic, the myth explores the potential of redemption and growth, even in the most enigmatic and formidable characters. You know, a lot of these myths, like the Odyssey, is just a part two of the Iliad. Same thing with Agamemnon. There are a series of plays written by, I always forget how to pronounce his name, Cycles? Stay tuned. Yep, very wrong. Aeschylus. Aeschylus wrote a series of plays on Agamemnon and his returning to home. Because if you guys didn't know, in order for them to get to Troy, there was the quelling of the winds. Because I'm forgetting now, but I believe it was... I want to say it was Athena. I'm forgetting now. I've been meaning to watch that. I haven't watched that show Troy in a long time, the one, The Fall of a City on Netflix. I might delve back into that. I was talking to one of my friends that I tutor. I don't like calling my tutors my clients or anything like that. Y'all are my friends. So yeah, Leo and I were talking, and you know, we were talking about heroes in general, and I find this also fun and interesting and stuff. But you know, it goes to show, like for Agamemnon, we'll get into that one at another time, but really, if you guys have never heard of the sacrificing of Iphigenia, I mean, in order, because Agamemnon was just he was a warmonger, and he was also trying to, you know, make his bro happy, because God, I forget his name too. I'm sorry. You guys are going to have to fill in the blanks for me right now. But the king that basically heads this battle, you know, over Helen, you know, because Paris runs away with Helen of Troy and skibbity bibbity bop and all this stuff. And, you know, whatever his name is, King, his brother of Agamemnon. Agamemnon's like, all right, I'm going to do this for you kind of thing. But he's also like a warlord kind of guy. And the quelling of the winds, they were just stuck at Greece's shores, and they couldn't sail to actual Troy because the winds were, it was just a headwind. And so basically Agamemnon has one of his high priests go and talk to the gods, in which case the gods, and I'm pretty sure it's Athena, but I forget exactly, says, well, guess what? Agamemnon forgot to do some sacrificing and some stuff. I'm kind of ticked now, so now you're going to have to sacrifice Iphigenia, your daughter. And Agamemnon was like, really? I can do that. So he does it, and he kills his daughter in order to quell the winds of Iphigenia. Lies to his wife, Clytemnestra, about that. Clytemnestra learns after the fact, super upset. Guess what happens when Agamemnon makes his way back on over from Troy back to Athens, I believe is where they were living. We'll just say Greece and not be specific with the city. And Clytemnestra basically plots his killing. And then it leads into Orestes, and then the Dionysian snafu that ends up happening, and then mom ends up doing another really bad thing. And yo, Dionysus, yes, he knows how to party, but he also knows how to make people go mad as frick. So we'll get into that one. That was a lot of fun and also pretty shocking. But yeah. But we'll get back into just kind of talking about some of this stuff here. I did write a poem also on this kind of stuff. Maybe I'll read it, maybe not. I don't know how long I want to make this. I don't want to make it too long. But Odysseus, the mortal, or rather the transformation of Odysseus's crew from beast to men, kind of serve as a metaphor for the malleability of the human condition. And this is kind of more my opinion. This is my writing. This is my kind of sussing out. Because Circe's willingness to reverse their enchantment, signifies the capacity of change and redemption that resides within every being, even those who have strayed from the path of virtue. It is a testament to the transformative power of compassion and the recognition, really, of shared vulnerabilities, in my opinion. Circe's journey from a solitary sorceress to being more of a capable forging connections, there we go, resonates kind of a poignant commentary on human experience, right? Her solitude represents the isolation that can accompany great power and the yearning for understanding that transcends the boundaries of the immortality. But then the myth invites the contemplation on the significance of empathy, connection, and the inherent value of shared humanity. So as the myth of Circe weaves its narrative tapestry, invites really us to reflect on the nuances of the power, the consequences of hubris, what else, the redemptive potential inherent, nature within all of us. We're capable of change and growth, but human nature tends to fall back into the same tropes. But sometimes we get past those things. And through the trials and transformation of Circe, we glimpse a myth that transcends the realms of gods and mortals, delving into the very essence of what it means to be human, a journey fraught with challenges, vulnerabilities, and the eternal quest for connection and understanding. So with all that, I'm not going to write the poem. Maybe if you guys are really curious about the poem, I'll do it in another time, in another way, shape, or form. Do I have a lot of writings? I've been diving back into my old OneDrive, finding old writings that I mentioned about before, you know, research writings and all that stuff, like, you know, research papers and, you know, lab reports and, you know, those kinds of things that were as long as 50 pages. Man, I used to throw down on writing. So I also have things on, like, you know, I'm a lovey-dovey kind of guy. I've realized that when I did fall in love, I fell in love with love, and then I started writing about love, and I couldn't stop writing about love. And when I do, I find myself in those times in my life when I do that kind of stuff, and I found a lot of writings, lots of poems. So if you guys are curious about that and you want, I'll put myself on blast. But I need to hear that y'all really want that, because I'm not going to really put that kind of stuff out there, because it is kind of personal to me as well. But if you guys appreciate poetry, and I've done slam poetry before in the past, I've done open mics with poetry. I just like words, and I like conveying them in a beautiful way so that it can maybe evoke some sort of visceral response in a person or in me. With that being said, I'm going to leave it there. I hope you guys enjoyed this little mythology. And with all that being said, thank yourselves. Thank your mind, your body, your soul. Look down at your toes, wiggle them. Try and spread them. I've been trying to work on spreading my toes, you know. Girlfriends out there that wear like tight shoes and or heels and stuff like that, do corrective work on your feet, or else you will get bunions later on. I was thinking about that. I got these things called toe spreaders. They're hard at first, but you kind of just taper up. I'll show them probably in the TikTok, because I'm honestly all about like improvement of, you know, body health as well, and feeling better, moving more efficiently, and just well through this world. I want to feel good now. Seldom do I feel good now, but I'm trying always to feel better now. But with that being said, thank yourselves. Thank an aspect of yourself. Thank your right eyeball. Maybe your left nostril. Maybe you flare your nostrils if you can. Try and wrinkle back your forehead. Can you do that? I learned that when I was in my English class senior year. It was so boring. I learned how to do that. Where you pull back your ears and you're doing it right now. God, my face gets tired though. So with all that, later, y'all. Tempus est discedere.